Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Is It Just Me? And obviously, it is not just me. I'm your host, Joe Elvin, with our other host.
And I'm James Williams.
Yes, here we are. And we have a fabulous guest this week. All-round entertainer, woman extraordinaire, comedian, actress, Irish person.
The list professional of Irish person.
I was going to leave that as a surprise reveal for the end.
Oh, there you go. You've given it away. It's Miss Aisling B in the house.
Hello.
We are so excited that you're here, Aisling.
We are. We've been trying to get you for a while now.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
You're a hard woman to pin down. You're so busy.
Yeah, that's what many of my lovers say. Hey-o.
Yeah.
Last year was a bit nutty, so it's nice. I think this is the first official work thing I've done of 2018.
Yes, because today, I don't know when you're listening to this, everybody, but today is the 4th of January.
The 4th of January.
So we're sort of like, this is my first actual piece of industry.
Yes, this is industry, believe me.
It really is. Yeah. It's full on.
Especially for you.
I don't know what industry, maybe it's a farming industry or the fishing industry, but it's an industry event.
We like to keep it vague.
Yeah.
It is also 2 days since my last Celebration Mini Chocolate. I'd just like
doing some kind of like I always feel there's this lovely queue in Paper Chase of women with hopes and dreams during January, and I'm always in that queue. There's something about Paper Chase that people are like, well, I'm going to get no pens, I'm going to get new diary, new list, and your whole thing is like...
And a gratitude diary.
And a gratitude diary and all of this stuff, and I'm a big in that Venn diagram of people. And this
I've been
is
thinking
the
about it,
it
but I can't be asked to join that queue.
Well, here's the thing I got told by a therapist about 2 years ago. He told me to stop making so many lists. And I don't mean like when you're going to the shop, buy bread sort of thing. But he said that it's important to not make as many lists because what happens to the body when you make a list is you get a dopamine hit. So a happy hit of your happy hormone for just writing the list. But you don't get the happy hit from doing the thing. And then you're carrying around this list and every time you don't do the thing, you have a sense of failure that you didn't get around to it. So if I'm like, oh, write a book, and that's always on my list, I get a happy hit from writing the book and a constant sense of failure because I didn't tick off something on my list. And so to just trust that you will remember and get round to things without a list. But we're, as a society, we're definitely addicted to list making because it does give us a sort of feeling like when we look at our phone.
That makes so much sense. Now I know why I've never been a list maker.
I love that therapist because I'm telling you, nothing stresses me out more than looking at a list of things
because
I have to do.
And you will remember what you have to do and you'll get done. But there might be something that slips through, but you won't always get done what's on your list either.
Exactly.
You will kind of remember, other than like send email by the 8th to tax person. It's not that sort of stuff. It's more the bigger things. And you will remember to get round to them. But that sense of carrying a list of almost what was happy and then carrying around a list of your failures actually isn't good for us. And it doesn't give us the incentive to actually finish the task.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting because I'm like, oh yeah, if I make sure I get the task done and I get a dopamine hit from finishing the task rather than writing the list, I'm more likely to do another task.
Because how often, I know that people in my life who are the list makers. They say they claim that they get the dopamine hit from mm-hmm. then crossing off the thing. But
yes.
How often do you physically, literally actually get out that list and go,
yeah, and sometimes also, you put the things afterwards.
Also though, isn't it about how realistic your list is? Because if it is literally things like go to Sainsbury's, wake up, breathe.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, we could all cross those things off a list, couldn't
we? But then sometimes I do those things. Or you do the thing and you're like, oh God, I never put it down on my list. We'll put it down on my list and now cross it off. Yeah. Sainsbury's are done.
Yeah. So terribly efficient.
Mm-hmm. But basically, yeah, so let's ditch the lists, people. Let's go and save some people from...
Yeah, that's going on my list.
Right.
And so, let's go save people from paper chase right now.
Yeah. Let's go. Guys, you don't need this. I do. There's a polar bear on it. No, you don't. It's not going to make you work anymore effectively in your accountancy job.
So you're the sort of like the anti-list guru. Where do you lay down the law, Aisling, on resolutions?
Resolutions, I'm not a Christmas person at all. I find the winter quite hard. I'm not in great form over the winter. Also because I work a lot at night doing stand-up, not prostitution. I work a lot of night on the streets.
It's a very thin line.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Sometimes you're like this. I think the other would be easier when you're doing a tough gig in the middle of a Christmas period. But I don't really like the winter, and you just sort of feel unhealthy, and there's a lot of kind of forced materialism and just forced togetherness that's not necessarily natural all the time in the cold. And then I love the idea of New Year. I love the idea of going, I think it's very important for humans to mark things. So like I'm marking that year is now behind me. Thank you very much, or up yours, but that's behind me. Now let's... It gives you a released energy into the next year. So I do like the idea of energy and resolutions. What I did with my... I had a couple of friends around on New Year's Eve and then we went to a house party afterwards. But I'm big into my crystals and witchcraft and wizardry. And we did like a little ceremony in the garden. So what we did was, and this was about 9:30 or 10, so before we headed off to this party, we made a list of stuff that we wanted to release from the last year. So goodbye to the negativity, or that guy or that girl or whatever it was, or that fight with someone, and wrote those down. And writing things down is very powerful as well, because it's out of your head and it's placed somewhere else. That goes exactly against what I said about lists.
I should have gone to this party.
And then we made that list, and then the things we want to bring in to the new year. And again, that's not necessarily a list of to-do things. That's like, I'd like more happiness or hope, or I'd like to find more hopefulness in the day. And so we lit a little fire in the garden, which there was a point I was like, I'm not sure I should really have started this fire. And I'm not sure I can manage this. Will we get some kava and pour it on it?
It's been like that episode of Friends where they're explaining the ritual burning to the fire brigade.
Yes, exactly. Do you know what? I did think of that as well when I was doing it, because one of my friends put in his and it really made a big blast. I don't know what was on his things he was going releasing, but it made quite a... Whoa.
Not one of those guys who likes his farts, is he?
So it could have been that, actually. Yeah. And then the future things, we like buried it in the garden. As a sort of a reminder that it's there. When you look out to the garden, you think, oh yeah, be more hopeful.
God, that's really deep.
I know. But were you drunk?
Oh yeah.
I'm amazed you could do all of that drunk.
I did look the next day. I felt really emotional about it, but the next day I looked at my handwriting and it was so scratchy. Love more, you know. This
That's a brilliant idea.
I have to say, this year I had a bit of an epiphany whereby I tried this year to, rather than... I did celebrate New Year's Eve, but I had this real thing about I wanted to celebrate New Year's Day.
Yes.
So I kind of reined myself in a bit New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. And then, I couldn't believe, I actually got up. I got dressed on New Year's Day.
I then
went out the house. Actually, I made a roast dinner. I took down all my Christmas decorations. And then I went out to the pub and we celebrated New Year's Day, which actually was really nice. Now, I found this something a bit maudlin about New Year's Eve. Whereas I thought, no, let's celebrate the first day of the year instead.
Yes, I'd never thought of.
No, and it was great. So next year, I'm going to try and galvanise my friends, so maybe do like a New Year's Day brunch or something.
Yes.
And just have a big old piss up on New Year's Day rather than...
Yeah.
So I think so New Year's Eve is fraught with emotion. It just makes people cry and a bit wobbly, and I know I am.
Yeah.
So,
it's a great idea.
Yeah.
But Aisling, back to your Wiccan
Wiccan ways. Wickety.
Did you do that in 2016? Because you have had an amazing 2017, right?
Yes. I mean, it's odd. It's very... I suppose in our jobs, and I mean, I know you must know this from working at Glamour, the amount of photos that don't make the front cover versus the ones that do. That
there's a book in that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All of the sort of blah. Yeah. I think it's been a long slog, but I think what I'm really learning about and trying to talk more about is the balance of what you see on social media and the balance of a life and what success is. So I think we all have to be careful of, especially in our industry and the world we live in, and when we're three white people living in London in the media sort of thing, you can get very bogged down by what the idea of success is. And actually, I suppose 2017, one of the things I'm proudest of was maybe putting aside more time for my friendships. And I know that sounds really wanky. Can I say wanky on the podcast?
Of course you can.
I've said wanky three times.
You've just done it.
Just done it, mate. Just
like one more there. Wanky. Yeah. Wanky. We'll all say it. We're all in this together.
That's wanky. W-A-N-K-Y, wanky.
Which isn't a rude word in America.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And Fanny's your ass. And Bob's still your uncle.
Yeah.
And yeah, just that to me, like, it was a very successful, maybe work year in terms of some stuff, but some of the things I was proudest of weren't necessarily being on TV, if you know what I mean, because that always happens. And I sometimes make TV shows in the last year, and then they all come out at once the following year, and you've sort of made them, and you forget then that people are watching you with work you did a sort of year ago. But in through all that time, especially like with a panel show. Like, say we shot a Taskmasters, which was a panel show I was on, and people really enjoyed, and that was great. But we shot them all over 4 days, and it was a really intense 4 days, and each one is 3 hours long. So you do like 6 or 7 hours of panel show records, which is a lot to record in 4 days. And I'd just done a week and a half before that, like, I'd finished like 10 episodes of 8 out of 10 Cats, and we do two of those a day. And, you know, it's just a lot to do. And sometimes it doesn't always feel like fun by the end of it, because you're kind of spent. But that's technically only 2 weeks of work for stuff that will come out on TV every week.
So, and that's right. So it feels like, I just feel like last year was the year that I can't remember how long I've been aware of you, but it's been a long time. But then last year I felt like, oh, there's Aisling again. Oh, yeah. Aisling's on TV. Yeah, it kind of felt like it was the year that you stepped up a level and became part of the mainstream consciousness through all your hard work.
I suppose the thing I take from that is, with all that, you work really intensively and it gets done, and then you might, like, I think I'm on TV at the moment nearly every week for, like, which is, you know, my poor mother's like, I can't keep up, I'm giving up now, I'm bored of it.
Almost like Benedict Cumberbatch in everything.
I'm very much the sort of light entertainment Benedict Cumberbatch. thank you. I'm glad someone finally
said that.
Do you know what, I'm not.
She made that your Twitter profile.
A rich man's Benedict Cumberbatch.
But to be fair, actually, it's not like you've just come out of nowhere. You have been doing this a while.
I've been an actor for 13 years.
Exactly.
And so, like, and then people say to you, oh, would you do more acting? And you're like,
a little bit of you dies.
Yeah,
right?
Like, 1 year, I think the only thing I did was a Holby City where my boob exploded. I was a person who had an exploding boob job. And it was a really intense storyline.
It can happen.
Yeah, it apparently did. And you know what? It was 3 weeks before the episode aired, and 3 weeks later, all of those pip implant things started happening.
Oh.
So it was really ahead of its time. Again, I'm a rich man's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, yeah, it was that wicker man, that wicker shit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was like, oh no, yeah,
maybe
I bring
that was
this
all
about
your fault.
Yeah,
yeah. God, I'd started a craze. But the sort of what I suppose what I'm trying to say is, you do a lot of work intensively, and then maybe nothing for a while, or you're live gigging or something like that, and it you have to really work out what a balanced life is. It's sort of, especially if what motivates you, like what motivates me, I know this sounds silly, but isn't to be on TV. It's to make sure that when I'm on TV, I feel like I've done my best work. And the jobs I do where I felt creatively, it might be a high profile thing, but I haven't felt creatively good, don't make me feel yay. They make me feel quite ugh. So for me, in going into 2018, I suppose will be making sure that if I have gotten to a level this year, that next year I can maybe have a bit more, I wouldn't say choice, because I've just been an actor for so long that we always resent, most actors, 90% of actors don't work as much as they'd like to, and 10% always go, well, when the script came in, you know, I was reading through a lot of scripts and I said no to a lot, and you're like, oh, you got to say no, did you? Great. you know, rather than doing seven rounds of auditions.
Is that what you're looking for, to get to a point where you're not terrified to say no?
Terrified, and maybe doing less things for more time.
Yeah.
So last year was just like, last year I totted it up, and like I did did. So Sarah Pascoe is one of my best friends, and she really had a long year of gigging last year. Yes, I'll ask her to do the podcast.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Big shout out. But like, she, like, I did 103 live gigs last year, and that would be a slow year for a stand up. Wow. So normally I do about 200, but on top of that, I did 31 panel shows, and that's a lot of things to have done, but also different employers to have worked for, different sets to go into.
Oh, so do you not run out of funny, Ashley?
Sorry,
do you not run out of funny?
Oh,
by that
point? I do. They
have a certain exhaustible level.
Remember, I don't watch anything I'm in, and one person sent me a clip of something I was saying on 8 out of 10 Cats, and it was the most banal thing. And I was like, why do they leave that in the edit? And I remember at the time me thinking, well, that won't make the edit, because that's so. I ran out of chat on that subject. It was like episode 8, and it was still about Trump or something. I'm like, we've also done, say, out of 20 episodes as I've been captain of Cats, 18 of those have been about Trump and Brexit.
Yeah.
And you just don't have anything left in your after. There's nothing left to say, and it's not going anywhere. And
I ran out of chat on that 10 months ago.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the most banal, and it's also, by the time you record it, by the time it's aired, it's already dated, which is annoying. So the most banal chat, and I was like, oh, why do they leave that in the edit? That's so annoying. But with all of that, you're working for so many, it's just very bitty and hard to get a sort of run at things. What was nice about the drama I'm doing, which is out there at the moment, it's all an iPlayer now.
And that's called Hard Sun?
It's called Hard Sun. It stars Agnes Dane, who's amazing, and Jim Sturgess, and I'm in it as well. What was nice about that is I flew home. I got that job when I was in LA, and I was a bit dubious about flying home from LA for a job because I planned on being out there for longer. But it was so nice to come home and do one thing, just, and I'd gig at night and stuff, but to just do one thing for a bit of a stretch rather than normally. And again, I'm incredibly lucky, I'm getting paid, who am I to complain, but just for, in terms of your mental health, to be doing so many bitty things in a day, to be to not get a run at it, it doesn't necessarily feel like you're employed, it feels like you're always working but not necessarily employed for a stretch, or like you can let your brain.
And Hard Sun is, that's pure drama, so you're flexing different muscles and
it's good. I've been an actor for about 15 years now, and I trained dramatically, and when I went to, I was at Trinity in Dublin for 4 years, and I did lots of sketch comedy, and then I had a big breakup, and I was like, right, I'm going to England to learn to be a dramatic actress, and I will never laugh again. And when I came out of drama school, I had like no agent, I had bleach blonde hair. I just thought, like, oh, the National will just ring up and put me in their plays.
Of course.
And they didn't. And spoiler alert, guys, they didn't. But I kind of couldn't believe it. Like, I was ready to play Medea and eat my babies. And then I remember going to like a workshop with a casting director, and she's like, you can fake being good at drama. I know that sounds like an awful thing to say, but you can have someone look out a window and put some kind of Adele behind them, and all of a sudden it's very sad. But you can't fake funny. You cannot fake.
True.
Because people will watch someone slipping over on the ice on YouTube because it's funny to watch, but they won't watch someone who's, it's not funny to, like, people, laughter can't be faked.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, maybe I should try and audition for more comedy stuff. And that's when I started writing more scripts and doing comedy. So it kind of, it was always there that I'd be doing it, but I'm surprised by how big a turn it went into stand-up and stuff like that.
And look at you now.
And look at me now.
Yeah.
The best of both worlds.
Look at me now, haters. Swivel on this.
You ain't got no haters.
There's a few of them out there, but they're sort of fun all the same.
Wow. we've had our fun now, Ashley. Yeah. Are you ready now to do some serious?
Yes, please, if you wouldn't mind. Yes,
this
thank
is,
you.
Is it just me? So let's get.
Oh,
on.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Joe Ashton, is it just me?
Yes, it already
is. It's got a real bee in my bonnet, and I've actually now got a real phobia of group dinners. Now, when I say group dinners, I'm not saying I'm a total, like, bar humbug, misery gut. I mean, when I say group dinners, I'm talking, like, 20-plus people, right?
Oh, so a party.
No, I'm talking about, you know when somebody, I'm coming off the back of, obviously, Christmas.
Group dinner with 20?
Let's define a group. I'd call a group dinner 6 and above.
No, see, that's a dinner party.
So you don't...
A group dinner for me, I'm talking about milestone birthdays, I'm talking engagement dinners, I'm talking big Christmas get-together where it involves a lot of people sat at a table. And where it often goes wrong and where I hate it is where what tends to happen is you don't know that many people there. So you'll know maybe your core group, but you've basically got a lot of people. And my issue with group dinners, and I'm talking about big group dinners...
I'm so angry.
My issue is, I think it brings out the worst in the human spirit and condition. It really brings out the most depraved personality trait to people. Now, mainly, it brings out people who leave before the dinner's over.
Yeah.
So they always try to get their bill earlier.
Oh,
they never pay for what they're supposed to pay.
No,
they
I always pay, but I do try to get out of it. Yeah.
They forget service. They forget the drinks they've had. And then at the end, inevitably, there are always people left picking up the bill, paying more than they should have. So yeah, it just literally makes it
This starts with the organiser. So I have to, I know it's not Irish and it's not female to toot your own horn, but I will say I'm a very good organiser of group activities. And if the organiser's bad, what you do is in advance you to tell everyone this will cost 30 quid, 5 quid includes service charge or whatever, and that's obviously a rough number. Please pick from this menu what you want. That's what you're getting on the day. Any extras, you go to the bar for a drink.
Exactly.
And then you also sit people near their pals, one or two. I hate forced. I get this a lot at weddings.
Oh, yeah.
You sit beside them, Ashling. You'll bring them out of their cells. I'm not at work now. I don't want to bring your old Uncle Jerry out of himself because, frankly, he's a bit of a pervert.
And it's also not speed dating. Stop trying to make me meet people. I want to meet the people I know at
you
this
You want to kind of sit and catch up with people. Yeah. So you make sure that people are actually sat beside someone and then, you know, and dullards can look after themselves. But I think that's where it's important to...
I agree with you. I think if you're going to do something, you've got to commit to organising it.
Yeah. I always get the people who I end up going into full journalist mode because they don't participate in the conversation. So out of nerves and
you become
absolute stress and trauma, I just sit there asking questions like a Michael freaking Parkinson.
Yeah.
And then after about 25 minutes, realise... This person, usually a guy, this person still doesn't know my name. that's a real bugbear of
Here's
mine.
Here's a question I have, because this is, Joe and I were talking earlier about a friend I had who needed a lot of help. And not in a needed help being wheeled out of hospital because he broke his leg. But I wonder... With that, do we, because it, again, in our jobs, it's quite an active thing. So I'd be quite active in sometimes doing stuff for people.
Totally.
And it's actually easier for me to do stuff for people than not. And sometimes my friend said to me, but do they ever ask for your help? And you're like, no, I just do it. And you're like, well, then have you maybe created your own problem? And now for you, it's important to ask questions and that's how you'd like to live your life. But I wonder, could you just leave them alone? And not give your energy.
I have tried that on occasion where I've
so
just
hard.
Thought, you know what? I'm just going to sit here and wait till you say something. Mm-hmm. And I have done it. And it is vile.
It's vile. It's so
really,
awful.
And for some reason.
And when you're good at it.
But for some reason, I still think that's a defective thing on my part, oh my God, I must be so boring that this person doesn't want to talk to me. Do you know what I mean? I take all the responsibility for it.
No, but also, I think because maybe it's a really wanky word, but I think because you're a communicator or a journalist, I think for you, silence is the most deafening sound in the world. It's a failure to us. If you're in a situation where you're professionally talking to somebody, silence is the worst thing you can be faced with. Whereas I think there's a lot of people, just people out there in the world, who are very comfortable in silence. They don't need the constant noise that we need.
That's so true. It's a failure. You read this communication as a failure.
On you.
They might think, oh, I was sitting beside this lovely person at dinner and we just sat there in silence. It was really easy company. You're like, this is a failure of a social interaction.
Or, God, that woman would not shut up interrogating me.
Exactly. No, I know.
I just ended up giving her my sort code and my passwords.
Oh, I haven't tried that.
You're
quicker than me.
What's your password?
My other thing as well, before you finish about group dinners, I noticed there's a terrible domino effect as well when it comes to drinks. So what tends to happen is you'll see people, because you know it's a big group, so you can't keep track of where everyone's drinking, and you'll just see a tray of cocktails go past, espresso martinis normally. And what then happens is the panic sets in. You're thinking, I'm going to get lumbered paying for those drinks. I'm going to have an espresso martini.
Which is really
No, it's not.
But then next thing you know, 30 people are ordering 15 espresso martinis and you've got $150 bill
at the
end of
it. That's where every group dinner, no matter whether you're in a Nando's or at the Grosvenor Hotel, get your drinks at the bar yourself.
Exactly.
And no one's ever going to
feel
bad about
that. And there's no shame in that. There's no shame in saying this dinner does not include...
Because you can still do rounds then.
Exactly.
You can
so your group dinner age has got very little to do with the social anxiety that it has for me. And it's all just about the bill the end.
Oh, what I was going to say, and also the other thing I would say about these group dinners, if you don't do what you do, Ashley, which is really organised beforehand, there's always some poor fucker at the end with a calculator sorting it all out. Well, there's hideously steamed drunken people on espresso martinis.
I would
not
pay £100 more
to not do the
guy with the calculator. I always think there are tiny heroes. They're the heroes who don't wear capes. Are the people who do the
sort the bill at the end of a group dinner. I know.
If you're ever at a group dinner with me and I'm sort of like just chugged my fourth espresso martini, you can add £500 to my bill, and like Ashley, I'll be so grateful that somebody else
sorted it out
I've always hated maths,
but you wouldn't be unhappy if you just had to go to the bar or give your card to get those espresso martinis.
Of course not.
So James, from now on, that is what I want you to take into 2018, that you can go, guys, will we all get drinks at the bar separately and just split the bill for the dinner?
I tell you what, I can't wait to get invited.
So it's not just me then? Can we just admit that it's not just me that has a fear of these situations?
I, for one, am looking forward to your New Year's Day group dinner. I think that's going to be
2019,
coming.
Starting with a hell of a fight.
2.5.
Hello, I'll have the lobster and 3 espresso martinis, please.
Isn't it funny, in dry January, all I think about is alcohol?
We're not obsessed or anything. We've got a problem or anything.
But no, we're all fine.
Is it just me who has, I'm not going to say one friend, a couple of friends who, if we're both not drinking, it's all a bit awkward. There's nothing to talk about. Is that a terrible, terrible thing?
Do you think as we get older, and obviously I'm not aging, and for any casting directors listening, But as we get older, we have actually, you've different groups of friends. You make kind of so many friends over the years, and some of them are just for certain reasons. And I'm probably a lot of people's drinking buddy, or go and see a show and then we've one drink and leave.
Compartmentalising.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any harm in being someone's person. Or like, there's some people I love going dancing with. We probably don't know anything emotional about each other, but God, we love, like when we go to a nightclub or something, we just love dancing, and we wouldn't even need to drink. We love being in a dirty club till 3 a.m. And then there are other people who I don't think I've ever had a drink with, but we're like, and then he didn't ring back.
Yeah.
So I think you can have, it's just weird when you find out that someone maybe you've told all your secrets drunk to is not actually that close to you.
Exactly. And when you've had a great night out and then you're, I don't know, walking to the tube together one afternoon and there's that silence again.
Tumbleweed. Tube tumbleweed.
And then I get into my head, I was like, just think of something, anything to say, and then that's all I can think of to say. And so that's it, I've got brain freeze.
Yeah, I mean, there's that expression, I think, people come into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. Isn't that the expression they say?
Vibes, that's nice, vibes.
It's very deep, isn't
it? I like that, vibes. Deep.
I think that my daughter quoted that from some YouTuber who said it.
I think they nicked it from me.
Yeah.
I'm like the Dalai Lama of
James,
this podcast.
James, are you on Instagram when there's all these quotes and they say Anon. Are you Anon?
I hate those fucking things.
I knew it.
But I think that does kind of tie into what we're saying a little bit here. Like, you know, there are certain friends you have for certain reasons. And I don't know where, I think there's a place for the person that is a great laugh and a great friend to you when you are drinking. Yeah. But let's be honest, I think in the hierarchy of friendships, you probably do want the friend that you can talk to regardless of your sobriety or drunkenness or otherwise. Mm. But to be honest, I think my thing at the moment, I mean, I've never been one to get on board with Dry January, and I am attempting it this year. My worry is it just means you've got a lot of time in your hands. So to be honest, I'm worried I'm boring. I'm not worried about my friends being boring. I think I'm just a bit more boring because... You just do kind of...
I'm sure you can figure something to do alone in that cottage, James.
You've
got all that extra time.
By the way,
on your hands.
Do live in a cottage. That's not a disgusting euphemism.
I'm not cottaging. Well, I am because that's my address. Here's another bit straight in from Aisling's self-help work. In terms of... it's very difficult as well to be vulnerable in our current society. And drink allows us to be vulnerable, which we're so desperately in need of. So a lot of the times when you're getting to know someone, you don't want to be the first person to be vulnerable and go, God, sometimes I'm lonely, because they might be like, ugh, get away from me. Whereas actually, when you have a couple of drinks in you, you can say sometimes what's in your heart.
So true.
And I wonder is that we need to connect with what I try to do with new friends. I've got this. Have you ever read in The Guardian's Saturday magazine? There is this Q&A, and they take all the same questions but with different people every Saturday. So someone might be a civil rights activist or an actor. It could well be Benedict Cumberbatch. And it'll be like, when did you last cry? How often do you have sex? What was the most expensive thing you bought and why? And I love reading those because I love reading the different ways people interpret questions.
Yeah.
And so I keep a copy of that in my diary. And sometimes when I'm making a new friend, about maybe 3 months in, I'm like, do you want to sit down and I'll do a quiz on you?
That's a good tip.
Yeah, it's a good
it's
one.
I
love being quizzed.
Everyone loves being quizzed because people actually get to... We don't get to work out why our brains work a lot of the time. And I think maybe what happens with those drinking pals is it's an investment to decide to be vulnerable with someone and risk that. And so maybe when you're like, oh, normally we were just like chatting about the match last night or whatever it was, and then now we're walking to the tube, it's now the time I go, so are both of your parents alive? And do you resent your sister or brother for any reason? You know, there's... And actually, that is a question that bypasses... What tube do you normally get to work? And you will make a connection then with that person.
Maybe
more
next,
likely to.
I think that's a really good tip, and I'm going to take that to my next boring dinner party. But for the tube walk, I might just think, like, what's your favourite M&S sandwich? That really gets people.
Yes. Those questions are a divider. Questions,
not when did you last have sex on the way to the tube?
Yeah. Imagine just straight out of the back.
Was it on the tube?
Depends who it is.
I think that's a really interesting point, actually. You're right.
Can't wait to walk back to the tube with you, James.
It's going to be so wonderful. Overwhelming. But I think that's so true. I think you are right. A lot of people do treat alcohol as their opportunity to be vulnerable.
Yes, of course.
And I
do.
Think, to be honest, this has now been my...
Is that a good thing?
Well, I was going to say, because my thing is now, I've really tried hard to just be a bit more just generally open and without filter. Not in a rude way.
But in
the sense, if somebody does say to you, how are you doing? And going, actually, I'm feeling a bit shit today. And without being that, suddenly that person that volunteers way too much information in a very uneasy, uncomfortable way, trying to do it with a little bit of charm and humour, but still generally being quite vulnerable and honest.
Yeah, so that's how we go against... Maybe you'd be amazed at how there's a starvation for those stories as well.
Yeah.
And I get this a lot doing stand-up, and you can see the material. People are like, oh, I can breathe now, someone else has said it. And then you can see the stuff that's like... And sometimes people need to be free from cares. You want to have a laugh, and it's not always like it. But there's just the... just not giving in to the fear that you can have 5 minutes of that for 40 minutes of laughs.
Yeah.
I think that's okay. And it's a real... Even when I'm on stage and I'm like, oh, I'm going to talk about this and it'll be over in 2 minutes, this little bit. But that 2 minutes can feel like 20 rather than like gag, gag, bang, bang, bang. But it makes for a more interesting set of stand-up.
And I think it endears you to other people who feel bonded.
Maybe feels more
by
real.
By that common experience. And I completely agree. If somebody just being slightly more real, it just helps everybody to exhale a little bit. And I think that only good can come from that.
Exactly. So you're not being boring.
Where did we get here?
Just be real, people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, that sounds like another terrible Instagram quote, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, 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 not at all. You are Anon. I know you must be Anon.
James Anon Williams.
Yeah. Responsible for so many quotes on Instagram. But Sarah Millican has, you know Sarah Millican again. Sarah Millican, I'll ask her to do the podcast show.
Yes, please. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Oh, not the other Sarah, this Sarah. Yeah. But she is a thing about, which I always really liked, about... when you've a bad gig, and so you can apply this to a bad day or a bad day at work or whatever, you have until 11 a.m. the next morning to sit in the, a bad gig or a good gig, to either sit and wallow in the sadness of that or live in the sort of, woohoo, I'm amazing. And after that, you either become arrogant or moany. But still, allow yourself the time to sort of sit and be like, oh, that was awful. And that's a kind of not a bad way of... not feeling like, am I being too complainy or you know, because we should all be allowed to complain. There's always that sort of, well,
yeah, no, but allow yourself to have whatever that emotion is, be it happy or sadness or hurt.
Sit with it for a little
bit. It's like a time out on your processing thoughts, isn't it?
Yeah. Feeling so much better after this. This is like great therapy, Aisling.
You'd think it was January or something.
I go out onto the street and he goes, God, I really learned a lot, and I'm there drinking a whiskey bottle outside.
It was Christmas Eve, babe,
and I respect
the drum song.
Last topic, Aisling.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for this? You are sorting out my life today.
Oh,
I feel
great.
Like everything you say, I'm writing down, and it's just going to inform the way I'm going to be for the next 12 months. And speaking of being.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
praise
I don't know. I don't know if it's just me or not, but is it, you know, how do we feel about, you know, rightly or wrongly and by our own choosing or not, being defined by what we do for a living? And that's a very, very interesting soul-searching topic for James and I at the moment.
Yeah.
You know,
so you guys gave up, you guys came out of Glamour when?
About 2 months ago.
2 months ago. Yeah. So you're still in the whoa. Like,
well, Joe was there for 17 years.
I was there 17 years.
I was there nearly 50.
But never mind where you were. You had a regular place to go to in the morning, a regular building, a regular group of people to see. And that's...
in itself,
I suppose, that's probably
that's
the scariest
like,
thing.
You've had a physical rug pulled from underneath you. Like you said, it's about being anchored somewhere and anchored
but
with people.
I've had a great lesson from it all. Now, I, you know, I stayed at that job a long time because it was very hard to... It was a fantastic job.
But also, Glamour was like, to blow smoke up your bottoms, it was a really...
Let me just turn around.
Good, glossy,
Oh, that feels good.
It was a great magazine. It celebrated women.
You guys
achieved a lot. Like the Glamour Awards always had this host of people from a variety of like, it was just, like I, this year was my first Glamour Awards, but like the variety of women that were celebrated at it was just really inspiring. You're like, yes, this is great. And
know,
it can be about dresses and makeup and stuff.
I'm going to really
miss
that.
But there's also this.
Yeah.
I will miss it. And I do miss it. I miss having that audience to connect with. But I'm going to be really serious now. When, you know, for doing something for so long and being Joe Elvin editor of for so long, I honestly thought that when I wasn't Joe Elvin editor of, it would be like I died.
Yeah.
I thought no one will speak to me. No one want to do the podcast.
Where's
no
your
one will,
power?
And I say this to reassure anybody else who may be going through similar things on a smaller or a larger scale.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if I think because I made good relationships mostly on the way. I'm sure there's a couple of people out there who hate my guts, so, you know, from professional wrangles. But I think if you've sort of tried to have integrity and tried to be real, as we were saying, actually people still did email me back. So I was quite relieved by all of that. So I think I had defined myself by my job for a very long
time.
But
it's also not, that's not a is it just me thing. Because especially in the world we work in, people sometimes value you by your importance. So I spend a lot of time in LA. I spent about a third of my year in LA. And what's interesting is LA and Hollywood is a town built on who are you, what do you do? But I sort of go there for different reasons because I'm a nobody in LA. And sometimes it's quite nice to like breathe and not be recognised in the shop or go on stage and have no one know who I am and be able to sort of find my way without any pressure on stage. So it's, I'm sort of oddity in the town. But I've gone to the, this is all name droppy, but sure, feck it. I've gone to the Emmys twice. So this year I went with Sharon Horgan, and last year she was, well, the show was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Carrie Fisher. So Sharon, I went along as Sharon's plus one, delighted with myself. And then the year before, I just went to, again with Sharon, Catastrophe was nominated. I just hang on to Sharon's coattails.
And who wouldn't, to
yeah,
be honest,
exactly. But I am
Sharon, another award.
Sharon, can she do the podcast?
Yes, I mean, Sharon's been saying she will for the last year.
Can I just say
we know you're listening, Sharon.
I can see that I'm here for my connections to other cool
Yeah, we're not actually going to broadcast this episode.
It's not true. You're here because you live around the corner.
This isn't even turned on.
This mic doesn't work.
And so, but the 2 years I've gone, I've been really interested in seeing how in the rooms, people... If you have a TV show out 1 year, you are brought into those rooms. You don't have to queue. You don't have to queue at parties. Everyone's looking at you. The following year, your TV show is not working and you're not looked at.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just made acutely aware of, and what's lovely about going with Sharon or going with someone who, like, Sharon's like family to me, is that you have to hang on to those relationships, because people, we can all get carried away when we have successes and stuff like that. But in that town, you are not nobody if you don't have a TV show, but you can be made feel like you are.
Yeah.
So you have to have something else. And that's why I was saying earlier about when I'm on TV a lot and I don't feel like I've done something I'm creatively proud of, I can't bring that home with me. I can't say, well, I was creative, but I wasn't a success. That will keep my soul fed. But if I'm like, well, I was on TV, but I wasn't happy with the work, and then next week I'm not on TV, that's a real, there's an emptiness there. That will be made worse by unemployment, or if I don't get a job or something like that. So I think you're not totally crazy to feel like that, because especially, like, it's one thing in comedy where you have to be funny, but in the magazine world where it's a lot about surface stuff and there's loads of things that are surfacey, that I can only imagine what it feels like in the fashion world where there's a high turnover of people and who's hot and who's not.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, because you don't want to feel like you're not, because you know what it's like to be attached to
that. Oh, I'm not hot, and I'm fine with that.
You are very hot. I'm looking at Jo right now. She's looking
I think
hot.
As well, you know, we have to acknowledge we are, I think, whether first generation or certainly our parents were, I think, the last generation of people who literally did a job for life.
Yes.
You know, and I think we're in this very strange period now whereby... Mm-hmm. And I think this is what I'm going through at the moment, is I was somewhere I loved for such a long time. And like you said, it was a hard job to leave. And in a way, it was good. We were given no choice in the end. But, but you know, we never would have left.
I was drinking every day at work and I was fired.
We were basically those people at a party that would not leave. So it's just like, here's the exit, go, the music's off.
Yeah.
So, you know, but obviously, I won't lie, I found this quite a tricky transitional period.
Because and 2 months is, 2 months, you guys are probably still, I'm not a doctor, but physically in shock. And probably, that was 2 months going into Christmas.
Exactly.
That is, I've been freelance for 15 years and it's still like I didn't get a job. So I've like a couple of good things happening this year, but I was down to the last two for this job that would have been filming in 3 weeks time, and I just had it in my head that I'd gotten it. I never normally let myself think that, and then just before Christmas I found out I hadn't. Ugh. And it's still, even though I've got loads of things going on this year, I've worked loads, I'm so incredibly grateful, I felt, well, that's that, I'm out of here. I'm not, that would have been the thing that people would have been respecting me for, and I'm out of here now and I've got no work. And that's, and also I didn't get the job, which means the director essentially thought I was crap, and that all went through my head rather than going, look what I'd achieved. Well, and it is a scary,
don't you think, as well? I think also
to be freelance, you do
this is exactly what I was going to say. I think freelance is actually, you know, and I avoided doing freelance work for a long time for this very reason, because I think you have so much time to think, and sometimes being alone with your thoughts is not a good place to be, you know.
The fact that you do this show together rather than on your own is already,
oh my god, I've said this to Joe before, this show is pretty much, and it sounds really dramatic, this show has pretty much saved my sanity the last couple of months, because it's been the one thing that we've got that's consistent.
We love doing it.
And we enjoy it, you know, we love lovely reactions from people, we've had incredible support.
And you have co-workers, you're both each other's co-workers.
We still see each other every week, few days.
My pod husband.
Yeah, he's your pod husband.
Pod husband, pod wife. Yeah. But yeah, I think as well, you know, we just need to give ourselves a lot more of a break and just accept that, you know, you're not, you know, sometimes I feel now I need to look at this as a new chapter, a new beginning, and just figuring stuff out and finding
freelance
what I want
really
to do.
It's really hard, especially when you're on your own. I read something that humans are programmed to be around each other, because if we didn't get anxious when we're on our own, we would all end up being hermits and we wouldn't have procreated. So in our animal brains, we all, after I think it's something like 10 hours being on our own, our anxiety levels double. And I don't mean when you're pottering around the house or something like that, but you need to see other humans for your sanity levels. So we naturally all stay together. Like, that's part of our animal brains.
In your line of work, Aisling, and you know, you're sort of like freelancing and hustling for work in that way. Where's the line for you when you need that support of people who know what it is, the kind of work that you're going for and how tough it is? Where's the line between that and trusting people with being vulnerable who are sometimes your competition?
It doesn't really happen as much in stand-up because we're all... we can all work together at the same time, and we're not all pretending to be a sort of blue monkey in a TV show. We're not all trying to be that one thing. We're all being our own things. In acting, I'm really lucky. I feel like when I'm a stand-up in LA, because I'm also acting there, and I'm auditioning a lot. And I thought to myself, what a lonely town this would be if the only people I met every day were other actors in auditions who I hope don't get the part because you're my competition. So we're not going to go, do you want to go for tea after this and talk about what we both just did in an audition room and wonder who got it? Whereas with stand, I get to do that. And then in the evening, I go and do stand up and I work regularly with five different people on each show. And then you do go for coffee and beers and stuff like that. And I think stand ups also know what it's like to be quite lonely. It's a really lonely job. And it's the worst part of stand up is traveling on your own. So you might get to a gig in the north of England, do 20 minutes, have a beer with someone if you know them on the bill, and then travel for another 2.5 hours back down on your own, just with your thoughts. And that's and having to think about yourself all the time and talk about yourself.
And then try and find that up energy to get on stage.
And at night time when most people are going to work, just ourselves, nurses and robbers. And that loneliness part of it, I think, is the part of freelancing that is the scariest bit. Also, every time you do a job, you're already almost unemployed as you start it. So when I get an audition or something like that, I'm like, oh, great. I wonder what the next thing will be, though. So you don't get to get a job and run at it for 2 or 3 years. You are constantly about to be unemployed, even if the job you just did paid you 5 million quid. I've never done a job that's paid me 5 million quid. But you're already unemployed.
Yeah.
So you always say yes to things as well. So you stretch yourself.
Yeah, you do. And then you. So that's what I did a lot. I definitely have it. I know I can see it in Sharon as well. We come from quite grafty families. I grew up in a single parent family. My mother always worked. All our family are very grafty. Sharon's family are turkey farmers and big workers, and they're all grafters as well. And I know them all quite well. And I think we both have a panic if there's no work to do, because it's that, oh God, I'm out of work. I'm not finished a job. I'm out of work.
Mm. Yeah.
And they're two things to get your head around it. So I'm not sure I totally know how to relax and not work.
Maybe if any of us did proper jobs, we'd be quite happy defined by them. If I was a doctor, I'm a doctor. That'd be great.
Yeah, there's patients today. Yeah. There's always time to maybe write an article or write a new idea or come up with something new, even if it's midnight at night. And it's very hard to have. There's no natural 6 p.m.
Exactly,
in freelancing.
Mm.
There's, to quote another book, in Amy Poehler's book, Yes, Please, she's got this bit about your career versus your creativity. And 1 year I'd worked quite a lot, but I felt quite sad at the end of it. And again, people would come up to you and go, you're doing really well, aren't you? And I was like, yeah, okay. And you just have to nod your head, even though you don't feel happy. I was just like, I suppose from the outside, that's what it looks like. And I realised that when I read this, she was like, there's your career, and your career is your bad boyfriend. It might be really nice to you one day, but it's not going to be nice to you forever, and you can't rely on it. But then there's your creativity, and your creativity is what nurtures your soul. And that's what you should be moving stuff for, and that's what you should be panicking about, and that's what you should be, because it will reward you back if you feed it. And 1 year I just realised I'd maybe done a lot of career things that weren't necessarily creative. And so I was sort of just basically turning up to events with a bad boyfriend, but maybe we weren't actually happy in our house, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's a really good way to think of it.
By the way, I wasn't actually going out with someone I didn't like.
Love old Amy Poehler.
That bit, for some reason, out of the whole book, that bit connected with me, because it's so hard to tell which is which. And similarly, if you work in an office job you don't like, but actually you get to do lots of stuff at the weekend you don't mind, and you don't mind taking the paycheck, then you're sort of fulfilling the life you want. But if you're in a job where you're getting paid a lot, but maybe getting bullied in the workplace, or you're working with people you don't like, you're sort of taking a hit in your sanity for something else. But on the outside, people go, oh, that's a great job. Oh, you're getting paid a lot for that, aren't you? And you're like, yeah, but why haven't
I? But I do think the world is separated into people who can actually do work they don't like. If the paycheck's good and they can take home the money.
But they're getting fed by something
else. Yes, they basically work so they can live at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Whereas I was always somebody, I could never do something day to day that I hated. Because I could not spend that many hours a day doing something I hated, which is why I went down a creative path, you know? So I think there is a divide in it. But I think then...
The negative side to that is then... Do you know how to have a weekend?
No, it's all over the place. Yeah, as well. Yeah, exactly. Where creative jobs are a lot more hard.
But your life
to come
balance
by.
Might take a bit of a bit of a knock.
Oh, man, this is such a huge topic. We could talk about it all day, but we can't
because there's a man knocking at the door.
There is. There is a man.
We're
just
here.
We just have to let you go. You are a very busy bee.
I don't know which one of us the man wants, but. Probably you.
Oh,
right?
God. Oh, my God. Yeah. Do you think so? Yeah. Oh, what's my hair like?
Yeah.
Oh,
you're looking gorgeous.
Oh, vibes.
As ever. Now, you're on Hard Sun on BBC One at the moment.
Oh, yes. So it's done this new thing where it's put it all on iPlayer. So from Saturday the 6th, before this podcast goes
awesome.
Out.
Awesome.
It will all be on iPlayer, but it's also on BBC One every Saturday, I think, 9. And it's very scary. It's from... Neil Cross, who made Luther, so it's his
Amazing. Show. Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm very much looking forward to that. You have been an absolutely divine podcast guest.
You guys have been divine. I can't wait to come round to your cottaging parties.
Yeah. And those big group dinners where we're all going to fight.
Bring Is that what you call them, big group dinners?
Thanks for listening, everyone. And if you have any thoughts or suggestions for topics you'd love us to sort of, you know, discuss on the show, please do email us at isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com.
So glad I always forget what that is. But you can follow us on Joe_Elvin on Twitter and Instagram. What's yours, Joe?
I'm James Conroy W12 and everything.
Do you want to plug yours, Ashley?
We Miss my B. butt or my Instagram? at We Miss B, and that's BEA.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.